What happened to Jesus' disciples? What has happened to you? Think about it for a moment. Just today, as you look back on your life, if you were to go back 10, 20, 30, 70, 80 years, however far back you can go, and if I was to put a crystal ball in front of you at that age and say, everything that you were going to survive, you would not have believed me that you were going to get through. If you had a crystal ball and could see into the future, many of you wouldn't choose to go through what you have gone through. But you are here. You have survived heartbreak and losses, griefs and sadnesses. There have been illnesses and financial strains. Crazy good things have happened to you and crazy bad things have happened to you. If you wrote your life as a book, what genre would it be? What title would you give it? Some of you, if you wrote a book, you'd have to sell it as fiction because nobody would believe you. Some of you would need a lawyer. Some of you would sell it as comedy. And probably there are stories within each one of you here that you have never shared with anyone. Deep, rich stories. Think about what has happened to you. What has brought you, as the Anglicans say, safely to this day? And then when we look at what has happened to Jesus' disciples, we just left behind the Easter story where they were scattered and they were scared. They were denying, they were running, and in the Gospel of John we just read, they were locked away in fear. And I think history and sermons have been very unfair to the disciples. We have likened them to cowards and scaredy cats. We have labeled Thomas as doubting rather than traumatized Thomas. Through Thomas, we have made doubting a crime in the Christian church. And then there's Peter. Peter, whose sole claim to fame seems to be denying Jesus three times. And yet, the passage we read in the Gospel of Acts was anything but a scaredy cat. Do we remember that Jesus also said to Peter, the rock, that upon this rock, God would build his church? I read a t-shirt this week that says, don't judge my life by the chapter that you walked in on. Don't judge my life by the chapter you walked in on. And how often do we judge those disciples by the small chapters and bits that we read? In healthcare, sometimes even we forget when families are being rude or disrespectful or difficult or throwing hissy fits somewhere in our ICU, that they're actually going through the worst days in our lives, and we have to stop and remind each other it's okay. Let them be disruptive or do what they need to do to get through this difficult experience. For many of us, the greatest disaster today is that it snowed. How many of you complained about that on the way in? We forget, right, that we are so privileged. Why have we made doubt a Christian crime? Because real, honest doubt can actually be the beginning of the forging of our faith. Jesus can handle doubt. Jesus went right into the center of the room to offer his hands and his feet as evidence of doubt. He allowed Thomas to touch his wounded hands. In fact, if Jesus could raise other people from the dead and heal other people's hands and feet and cure leprosy and feed the 5,000 and be raised back from the dead, why return to his disciples with wounded hands and feet and side? Why not go all the way? Why not resurrect all the way to perfect healing? Heal everything. Return to your disciples unscathed. But Jesus' wounds are his answers to our doubts. Your wounds are answers to someone else's doubts. The deeper your wounds, the deeper you will speak to the wounds of this world. The deeper you will heal this world if you allow Christ to forge them into something useful. One person I spoke to this week was so grateful that God had guided them to their new car. You know, the salesman and the right mileage and the model and everything was just perfect and an answer to prayer. And then I sat with a woman whose faith was sustaining her through yet another long hospital admission in the unknowing of her illness. Her doubts, her fears, her struggles, her disappointments, but also her faithfulness were just so profound that I felt ministered to in her presence. It was a blessing to listen to her. God, you see, is growing both people in their faith. But if faith is only that time when the right things come to us at the right way, then we miss the Jesus that puts out his hands before us and offers us his own woundedness to begin to change the world. And I want you to look at your stories this morning and see through each moment of brokenness, God creating a passport for you into the land of the brokenhearted. The psalmist in the psalm compares the practice of forging metals to make them stronger. He talks about going through fire and water, that process of heating and cooling metal and shaping them for service. The refiner's fire is the process of taking materials and making them so they will be stronger, more useful, and ultimately transformed and changed. Tempering is only part of the work. And see, some of us stop at tempering. Tempering makes us hard, but without shaping and heating and reheating until we are worked into something useful, we're just hardened. There are many Christians who have been hardened through their trials. We even use phrases like hardened hearts or hard-headed. And if people describe you as hard-headed, what they're saying is you've been through a lot and you haven't allowed God to keep putting you through and allowed him to mold you and change you and transform you through that. You've stopped. But it's okay, because God's going to keep working. When we are refined, that is when we begin to take shape, the impurities are drawn away and the beauty begins to emerge. The value that we have before God takes shape, not the value that the world assigns to us. Can you see how in our stories the disciples have been refined? When challenged about teaching the good news, they reply, knowing that they could be put to death, we must obey God rather than humankind. They've gone from John chapter 20, from being locked and hiding in a locked room while they let the women go down to the graveside, and from denying and doubting or even knowing or pretending they knew Jesus to preaching Jesus boldly everywhere they went in a very short period of time. They went from fearing death to facing it and almost embracing it as a symbol of being a Christian in the early church. Here begins the radical transformation that began the growth of the early church. When we are transformed, truly transformed, we can never go back. Just as a butterfly cannot go back to being a caterpillar, we are capable of equally radical transformation that leads to change, real change. And those disciples were so preaching the gospel with such fervor that they could not go back. It was too late. You see, if they had continued on the path of denial and doubting that was part of Good Friday and said, "Oh, don't know the man, never saw him, what are you talking about?" They could have crawled back into their rooms and probably quietly been forgotten. But no, they were changed, they were transformed, and it was too late. They were now before the high courts and the high priests. If we simply remained hardened or refined without transformation and change, then we fail to reach our full potential. And if you are struggling with some area of your life, can you stop and wonder for a moment how God is going to continue that path of transformation and change? And probably not in the way that we expect. Just as we look back in our life stories and think, "Oh my gosh, God brought me all the way through all these things." And I want to point out that Gamaliel's advice is great advice for those that are growing and transforming and changing. First of all, it came from a Pharisee, and they too have a bad rap in our church. Yes, the religious leaders of Jesus' day played a part in his crucifixion. But regardless of religion, a heart open to God, to learning, can always be wise. And if I was to paraphrase his advice in everyday language, it would read something like this. "People of Burlington East, consider carefully what you are thinking of doing. Idiots come and go. Other idiots will follow those idiots. For a time. Leave people that you think are idiots alone for a while. The problem will sort itself out." One person, one Pharisee, stood up. Remember, the anger of the courts and Good Friday and Easter are not that far behind them. But one person stood up and changed, for a time at least, the course of history. One person overrode the anger of that court, the crowds. And I'm left to wonder, where was he on Good Friday? Who can be Gamaliel for us? Who can raise up the wisdom of a life devoted to prayer and following God's leading, even in difficult circumstances? Because spiritual maturity requires emotional maturity. Back in that locked room, Jesus transcends the locked door, the fear, the unknowing, and enters in. And I would like to invite you, when we come to that time in our service this morning, when we enter into prayer, I want to draw your awareness to where pain and struggles are in your own story. And in the stories of those around you, where are the places where you have locked yourself away in fear? Where are the places where you need wisdom spoken to in your life? And where is the wisdom that God is giving you today? What are the moments where you have become hardened? Where are you hoping for transformation? Where can you celebrate change that has happened and is happening? Tempered, refined, transformed, and changed. May it be our journey today. Amen.